Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast, powered by SpannersReady.com, bringing you F1 blogs, reviews, podcasts, and occasionally news. Today's episode is called They Talk Too. I'm your host, Spanners Ready, and I'm joined by Matt Two Rumpets. How's it going, Matt?
It's going pretty well. How about yourself there, Spanners?
Well, I'm a little bit nervous, Matt, because this week we are letting loose the writers from SpannersReady.com.
It's always dangerous to let them out of their tiny little closets, isn't it?
Well, it's a lose-lose for us, Matt, because if they're terrible, then we get a bad, terrible show. But if they're amazing, then they've proved what they've been saying all along, which is podcasting is for idiots who can't write.
Although, technically, if they're successful at it, then are they not also idiots who can't write?
Interesting. It's a puzzle within a puzzle. No, I think it just means that they're multi-talented and we're the morons that need a microphone to get our point across.
Yeah, fair enough.
But firstly, I'd just like to talk about some of the reaction we got to last week's show, because look, you go away for 1 week and we get a record number of angry emails and tweets.
Honestly, this is why we can't have nice things. The moment I have to actually work on any given Sunday, you go and make a hash of the whole thing.
But Matt, we got flack from both sides. So surely that means that A, we covered both sides, and B, we need to think carefully. If we're going to have an open and free debate, can we handle the kind of tweets and emails that are going to make me cry? Because we did get accused of being too pro Rosberg, and also of being anti Rosberg, and of being Anglo-centric. So I don't know, is that not a good sign? Does that not mean we covered all the bases?
Well, skipping the Anglo-centric bit, then yeah, I think it's oftentimes a good sign that you've done a good job covering a subject if nobody's entirely happy with what you've done. Or else it's a sign that you just simply didn't reach any real conclusion and just sort of mishmashed about. So I'm going to go for column A on this one. You did a good job and you were fair in your coverage. And so as a result, everyone was irritated.
Yeah, good. Well, I hope so, because obviously we are Anglo-centric because most of us are over here in the UK. And we've got a lot of Lewis Hamilton fans on the panel as well. But we did have, you know, we had big guns fighting the Rosberg corner. We had Jake Sanson and we had Chris Stevens. So it's not like and Ryan as well. So it's not like the Rosberg side was massively outnumbered.
No, it wasn't. You had people who were sort of on both sides. And so everyone's viewpoint got aired. And, you know, as a show, you have to be careful about, I guess, reaching up firm conclusion about anything, because you want everyone to feel like they've been represented in the debate. That's one of the challenges, I suspect.
Okay, Matt, and in the time between planning this and it going to air, there was a bit of news. There was a bit of driver market news, but believe it or not, we have decided not to make it the focus of today's topic. We are going to continue with what we wanted to do, which is some key season reviews that the writers have brought along. But we are going to talk about it at the end. But really, I mean, it doesn't change the story that much that he quit. Yes, it was sensational, but we, you know, we covered a lot of his season already on the last episode.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the issue with covering him quitting is, of course, well, he's quit. Story done. There we just covered it.
You're right.
What? Yeah. You know, you can delve into this psychodrama all you want to, and we could spend ages doing that, but that's kind of pointless. The only really interesting thing now is what's going to happen next. And of course, we have zero data on what's going to happen next. So it's all going to be wild, uninformed speculation, which is fun, but hardly the thing to base a whole show on.
No, not a whole show, but can we dedicate the last section to wild, baseless speculation?
We are approaching the holidays, so your wish is therefore granted.
Honestly, this story will be much more interesting when Mercedes announce a replacement driver. So definitely in the coming weeks, maybe we will do a show that heavily focuses on this topic. But I do feel that we need some Rosberg apologists on to counter me, you know, to say whether it was a super brave decision or whether he's, you know, he's running away from a challenge, etc. And
to be honest, careful, slippery slope. You're starting to talk about it.
Did I? Oops.
Yes, you did.
So obviously people can probably guess where I am. But as a family man as well, I definitely have some sympathy for where he's coming from. But yeah, so to be super honest, we just don't have the Rosberg apologists. We are a super ham, fussy, heavy panel. So we're going to look away from Mercedes for the first chunk of the show. For those of you just finding us, we are an independent podcast hosted by SpannersReady.com. We aim to bring you race reviews before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. This show is safe work. No naughty words here. We're keeping it clean so you can play this with kids in the background or in the car or at work. Matthew, we have a different breed of guest on today.
Yes, we have a dangerous and somewhat unkempt set of guests in our riders.
Now, I will ask the listeners, forgive them. You know, they've not got their pro podcast setups on, but they are very, very well-informed people. So let's introduce, first of all, SpannersReady.com editor Stephen Williams. Hello.
Hi, Spanners. How you doing?
Oh, it sounds like you're joining us from a telephone and you only bothered to check your setup today.
That would be entirely true and not well planned, is it at all? Very rookie mistake.
But what is well planned has been your stewardship in the second half of the year of SpannersReady.com. Obviously, we've used this year as kind of an open beta to see, you know, in principle, can we get a group of good bloggers together with some informative and fun F1 opinions? How do you think we've done?
Well, it's been brilliant, hasn't it? From a personal note, I was a fan of the sport for a long time, coming to this role as editor, and it's just been incredible. The amount of talent with our writers that we've got at the moment, the interaction that we get with the fans that interact with the articles as well, it really pleases me. I'm sure it pleases you as well.
Well, you know, we've got a few duds in there, but some genuine writing talent as well. Joining us next is from Americaland, another American. We're infested with them. It's Michael Cords. How's it going, Michael?
It's going great. Good to be here, Spanners.
And which bit of America land are you in?
I am in Las Vegas.
Ah, the dirty bit.
That's right. Home to, what, 2 U.S. Grand Prix?
Yeah. Is it?
Yeah, 82 and 83, I believe.
Oh, before my time, Michael. Before my time. I do like your writing style, Michael. Since you've come to SpannersReady.com, you have far more of like a novelistic writing style. I really feel like you could write like an F1 novel.
We'll see. Maybe if this works out, I'll get a little bit more experience and start pushing my novel on your website.
Excellent. Oh, wow. Yeah, we could have release it.
No,
in
sorry. No can do. Sorry, I'm going to interrupt. You have to wait until well after my wife's potential F1 novel is published.
I genuinely forgot your wife was writing an F1 novel. Sorry, Matt.
It's okay. Well, I'm here to remind you of these things.
No, that's good. I'm really looking forward to that. And in fact, it's been quite interesting because Matt will occasionally send, because obviously Matt and his wife are American, they'll send us messages on the WhatsApp saying, guys, what's a good British phrase, you know, for this? How would a British person say this? So in a way, we kind of co-wrote it, in a way. And rounding off the panel is a Goliath in the social media and writing world. It's Neil, a.k.a. Fortis. How's it going, Neil?
I'm all right, man. What's up?
Yeah, it's good. I'm wondering which Neil is going to turn up today because you have a reputation as a fiery, passionate social media force. But when we met for a beer, you were the gentlest, calmest guy on earth. I was expecting fireworks, but you're massively chilled.
I don't know. I just have that sort of personality, I guess. People see me and get scared. Ooh. But I don't know. Today I'll try to be the gentle giant today. I'll keep it I keep it quiet.
And giant is the right. Me and Matt have both met you, and you are a gigantic human.
Tell my mom, thanks. I'll tell her you said that.
Okay.
Yeah, so it looks like we're already courting controversy, my friend.
Why is that?
From the live chat?
Yep.
And I hate to do this to someone who's new to the show, but Stephen is already being criticized for his camera work.
Oh, right, because he is on a mobile device, and that doesn't support group video. So, no, he's not just really stationary. That is, in fact, his profile picture.
Anyway, all right, help but share that.
Let's move on. Let's talk about some F1 stuff. Okay, I invited each of the writers to bring us topics that they found most interesting through the season, and I'm glad that Stephen has picked this one to kick off with. Stephen, what are you talking about today?
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about Max Verstappen.
Yeah, it really, it's been his year, hasn't it? It's been the year of the Verstappen.
It's just been incredible, really. I think he's 18, 19 years old, and just what he's achieved already. He's been in sport 2 years, one victory. Is it around 10 podiums now? I've been really impressed by him. I don't know what you guys think, if you want to share your stories on Max.
It's very similar, isn't it, to when Lewis Hamilton turned up in 2007 and we were saying things like, you're not supposed to overtake there. You're not meant to do that. And Max has had exactly the same reaction. You know, he's done things to make people go, oh, well, that's not on.
Exactly. Sometimes it leaves you speechless. I remember Silverstone, just the overtake on Rosberg around the outside, through the Maggots and Becketts, and you're thinking, nobody does that. You can't do that. And he just doesn't, goes and does it.
So that again, that's in the wet, isn't it, Matt? So we saw in Brazil as well, he was taking different lines to everybody else. What has he got in the wet that we're not seeing from other drivers?
Well, he's got recent karting experience, for one. A lot of the lines he took, especially in Brazil, were what they call the karting lines, where you learn to go in the wet when you're in a kart. But I think he has that same touch that we saw that Schumacher and Hamilton and other great drivers have, is they have an ability in the wet to feel the limits of the grip better than drivers who are perhaps more studied in their approach.
Sorry, go on, Neil.
I can understand the Max side. I'm not against him. I think he's a damn good talent and possibly a future world champion. But in regards to the Rosberg overtake, both of those, both the one in Silverstone and in Brazil.
Yeah.
I don't know if actually people realize what happened that led to the overtake.
Okay, God.
On both occasions, if you look at the one from Silverstone on his onboard, Rosberg actually made a mistake going through the S's and actually nearly dropped it going through the S's. And as such, he was offline, which basically gave Max the run in him, which made it overtake a whole lot easier and a whole lot easier. Wait, Brazil.
So you Brazil, actually found a way to criticize Rosberg. Well done, straight away.
No. I'm not criticizing. I'm defending Rosberg here. I'm not criticizing. Cool. Okay. I'm saying the overtake was aided by the fact that he actually, had he not made the mistake, I don't think Max would have actually attempted to pass him there in Silverstone. Brazil, it was the exact same thing again. If you look at it again from the forward camera,
yeah,
showed him again, actually the same thing happened and Max go outside. So in fairness to Rosberg, I don't think he got bamboozled or he actually contributed to that in some ways, but I don't think, had that not happened, I don't think Max would have made any of those overtakes on him. Personally, all right. That's just my opinion.
So a bit of a big deal made out of it, Stephen.
Yeah, I agree with Fortius there that it was due to Rosberg's car getting out of shape that led to Max having that chance. But I think any other driver behind, even if they had that chance, they would not have gone for the overtake around the outside.
Well, the thing is, Lewis would, but someone else. It's been happening a lot, though, isn't it? You can attribute one or two to fortunate circumstances, but more often than not, he has been in the mix, hasn't he?
Definitely. I was going to say, do you think this is more down to the Red Bull, the chassis that they've got, that is contributing to his performance in the wet? Because we've seen Ricciardo as well, not been as effective in wet conditions.
Well, a lot of times in wet conditions, it's also down to the tires and how the individual driver uses the tires. But I'm always a big fan, once everyone gets on the Verstappen bandwagon, pointing out that Fiat managed a third in China. And it was second, third race of the year. So it's nice to say, yeah, Verstappen's being brilliant. And clearly he's bringing it without fear, which is amazing. But you got to ask yourself, what would someone else have done with that same car? You know, and as much as he's a genuine talent, he's also very much a product of media hype. I think it's both.
Well, now, if only we had an Australian in a similar car who was struggling in a high downforce car, because in Brazil, I know Ricciardo said perhaps he was struggling with his visor, but Ricciardo has not made the same impact, especially in the wet this season, as Verstappen has.
You're right. He was terrible in Monaco.
Oh, yeah, and that was wet as well. All right, fine. So, okay, fine, okay. So you think the media hype is surrounding Max Verstappen. Stephen, they have been an amazing media machine, but also, I mean, a few slip-ups. There's been a couple of unguarded comments, you know, especially regarding, you know, F1 deaths that were criticised by Jacques Villeneuve. So just a bit of an experience there?
Yeah, he's 19 years old, and the amount of exposure he's had to the media already is quite mind-blowing. So you can understand sometimes, perhaps it's his personality at times, but he's quite forceful in some of his words, isn't he? Especially regarding the Jacques Villeneuve incident.
Let's go to Las Vegas, Michael Kors. How do you see the Verstappen family machine? Because it's, you don't get into F1 and then promoted up to a top team just by being a good driver. There's got to be some cool stuff going on behind the scenes.
Yes, certainly having his father be an ex-F1 driver is a huge help. That said, you have to have the talent. There's other drivers whose kids, looking at Prost and Stewart, their children, they moved up, did well, had some talent, but couldn't actually make that last leap into F1. So good on Max for doing it and doing it so young.
Do you suspect that Kvyat's rather harsh punishment was anything to do with the Verstappen machine?
Absolutely, yeah.
Ooh, absolutely.
Yes, because no doubt. It was always, the writing was on the wall from very early on that Verstappen was going to get moved up to the Red Bull team. And Kvyat, after finishing on the podium, as we just talked about, okay, he ran into Vettel in Russia, and they used that as an excuse to kind of say, well, his head's not in the right place. We're going to take the pressure off him and move him back to the Toro Rosso team. Really, that was just, I think, some excuse to get Max into the top-line Red Bull team as quickly as possible.
Okay, Stephen, let's talk about driving standards then, because he's come in and he's done stuff that people don't like. So particularly we're looking at Hungary and Belgium. Belgium, he was just trolling Kimi Raikkonen for the whole race. I'm struggling to remember quite what happened in Hungary, but let's assume it's moving in the braking zone. How do you feel he's impacted the racing philosophy of F1?
Firstly, I love how you can't remember the incident in Hungary, but you presume exactly what was the case that he moved in the braking zone.
Score. It was a high probability hit.
Exactly. Yeah, this is the point. The thing is, for all these incidents, he was never... Once was he punished or once was he investigated? So you sort of have to ask, why has a rule come in to... It's the anti-Verstappen rule, isn't it? That we can't move in a braking zone, we can't move on a straight. But if he's not been punished for them, then why has the rule changed also?
Yeah, it seemed like there was almost a gentleman's agreement, Matt, in years gone by that you're not allowed to move in the braking zone, but it was never written down. And this is one of my rants this year that you've really enjoyed, me ranting over and over again, that just let's just write all the rules down.
Yeah, well, of course, you know, when you value something, it automatically is worth less. And similarly, when you take a standard of behavior and try to accurately define it in words, you immediately create loopholes. And the standard in the past was flexible, but there was a clear understanding, I would think, amongst the drivers that they wouldn't do anything that potentially would lead to injury or fatality. So maybe you have some moving in the braking zone. Like I would say, for example, the move of Vettel on Ricciardo. Yeah, you know, that's like borderline, but for someone who wants to be a champion, you're in with a shout because you're not, on the other hand, Verstappen's move on in Spa is a clear example of something I don't think a driver would purposefully do to another driver in the old days. And he absolutely got away with it scot-free. And I think that particular move is what led to a lot of re-examination, because that could have been extremely ugly had Raikkonen not been paying attention.
Stephen?
Yeah, the Raikkonen incident in Belgium, that was one of those moments where you saw it happening and it was just so quick, and like you took a step back from the TV because you immediately think that Raikkonen's going into the back of Verstappen, he's going to roll sort of like Mark Webber did in Valencia. And it's just so frightening to watch. I could barely watch it myself.
Okay, then. But there's no doubt that he's come in, he's made a splash. Media hype or otherwise, he is now a big feature in F1 and he's a big name driver. Neil, I know you're not that impressed, but overall, come on, the Verstappen effect, he's been amazing for F1.
I'm definitely impressed with him, but I think the current comparisons, like for instance his drive in Brazil, everyone's like, oh, that's up there with the drive with the likes of Senna or yeah, Donington or Schumacher, and you're like, are you having a laugh? Come on, look at this. I can understand what he did, but you also have to factor in the situation at the time. He was on brand new tires. The cars he overtook were cars he's supposed to overtake. You know what I mean? It's not like he overtook a Mercedes. He overtook, what was it?
Some Force Indias.
Indias. Some, that red team. What's that red team? The one that's across that from that country that looks like a boot? Or, yeah, the Ferraris. And
we'll get to
those. Those were cars he was supposed to overtake. So it's not like he came up and he was on fresh tires.
Yeah.
Now, had it not been on fresh tires and he was on board and he'd done that, then you'd be like, whoa, yeah, then that is like one of those drives that you can say is up there with one of the best.
Yeah.
But I'm not taking away from his talent or his impact on the sport. I just think there needs to be a sense, a level of calm approach. It's just too much and it's in your face. Now he's being touted as the best driver on the grid and you're like, Are you actually serious, or is that supposed to be a joke?
Well, but then the same hype came with Lewis Hamilton, and it was true. He is the best driver on the grid. But
you have to look at the Lewis situation in a separate light compared to Max, because Max had a year's experience in the Toro Rosso, then he moved up to the senior team. Lewis came in on the back of, well, who's my teammate? The current double world champion. So that's a far, that's a, that, that in itself is a bigger challenge to Max.
Okay.
So he had to come in and because you have to remember, had he failed in that 2000 season against McLaren, had he been completely destroyed, that could have ruined his career before he even started.
Yep. Okay, so, but going back to Max briefly, I sympathize with what you're saying. There is a lot of hype around it. However, and because I wasn't convinced to start with, there's now a growing body of evidence. When these chances come along, he is taking them. And we look at Spain as well. You could say, oh, well, in Spain, it was just because he happened to get the better strategy. He happened to get the number two strategy, which just happened to work out. And Raikkonen behind him as well, a car that hasn't overtaken anyone since 1746, behind him to follow him all the way home. And, of course, Mercedes cars took each other out. But there's now a growing body of evidence. And you give him half a chance, and he's going to get there. Okay, we're going to go to Ferrari next, Matt. But what are the chat rooms saying about Kvyat before we go there?
Oh, well, you caught me in the midst of typing, my friend. On the Gas is thoroughly disagreeing with me about Kvyat, saying that the reason he was moved down is because Helmut Marko said he was slow in pace compared to Ricciardo in China, which he finished on the podium in China, correct? And my point was that, especially if you're looking at China, he would have suffered some loss of downforce as a result of his collision with Vettel at the beginning. And finishing on the podium demonstrates that one can finish on the podium. Not every driver in that position, Nick Heidfeld, can manage to pull off such a thing.
Okay, so we've got someone in the chat room called, my eyes are failing me.
On the Gas.
No, Baha Motomat. Sorry, I'm having to strain. He's saying Fortis for King. So I'm assuming he agrees with you there. Apart from the Kvyat stuff, We have got people saying that Signs is just as good, but it's just the media that is the difference. That's James Fennell that's saying that. Okay, last word, Stephen. Last word on Verstappen. Sum it up.
I was just going to come back to your point about the win in Spain. Now, obviously, he was very fortunate with the Mercedes drivers taking each other out. But the way his maturity for such a young age to hold off Raikkonen, although people say Raikkonen's past it, he's too old, he shouldn't be in Ferrari. But he said, the reason I won that race was because I knew how the Ferrari battery pack worked, or the power unit. I knew where Raikkonen was going to be quick. So that just shows great maturity, I think, for a 19-year-old. I think even Lewis at that age would not have had that same understanding when he came into the sport.
So you're a fan?
Yes.
Good. Stephen Williams, a fan of Max Verstappen. Let's move on from the heights of the F1 season to, well, not the heights. Let's bathe in the reflected glory of Michael Kors in Las Vegas. I cannot tell you how glamorous that seems from a cold, frosty day in South Central Bedfordshire. Wow, I think I would swap. Do you just spend all day every day in shorts and t-shirts sipping mojitos?
It's close, yes. immediately after the podcast, I'm going to go down, sit by the pool, have a nice drink and soak in the sun.
So people on the live streams benefit. Behind you, whose helmets are they that you have got on display?
Okay. One of them is mine, my current helmet.
Ooh.
My old karting helmet. And then just a Alain Prost. It's it's not a real helmet. It's not rated for actual driving or smashing your head into things.
It's just for looking cool. And what do you wear your helmet to do? I'm looking at it. It's like an open face. Tell me it's not motorbikes, Michael Kors.
No. Phew. No, I've switched out because the last time I used the helmet, I was driving a tin top Audi. I do high performance driving courses. I've done the Skip Barber regional racing, but someone of my size, just so you know, I'm a little under 2 meters tall. It's hard to fit into a single seater, but I have.
What the hell is 2 meters tall? Speak English.
6'5".
Right. So how tall are you, Neil?
Hold on. Yeah, I'm about 6'3", 6'4".
Yeah, and so two giant men on the podcast. I'm also a large man. No, I'm not.
You're a midget.
It's not true. What? Wow. I think they prefer to be called small people.
Oh, dear.
So we'll just go with that. Apologies to any small people listening. Michael, what subject are you bringing to us?
I'm here to talk about Ferrari. I'm here to talk about their dismal year. Now, it seems a little strange to call third place in the Constructors' Championship dismal, but it really was. It definitely fell short of their expectations for this year.
Especially coming off the back of last season, where they were the de facto challenge, really, to Mercedes.
That's it, exactly. They won 3 races last year, had a good winter where testing seemed to go well. James Allison seemed to have dialed out some of the handling issues that was affecting particularly Kimi. So they started the year with high hopes to be the challengers for Mercedes. And how did they finish? They were well and truly overtaken by Red Bull.
Yep.
Didn't win a single race and were really starting to get put under pressure from Force India, of all teams.
It's bad, isn't it? Now, there's a two-pronged attack on failure that they took. One was they seemed to just develop down a strange path, all sorts of things going on with the staff at Maranello. And on the other side of things, just on race day, they were woeful. I mean, which one do you want to start on?
Oh, it's hard to say. Good question. Let's see. I'd say in races, I made a couple notes just looking back. It's hard to remember all the times that I thought, it's hard to remember all the times that I thought, nope, they've done it wrong. They haven't pitted at the right time. And it really seemed that it affected Kimi Raikkonen more than Vettel. And I think it's because Kimi seemed to be a little bit of an afterthought regarding the strategy, regardless if he was in front of Vettel or not.
It, right from Australia, wasn't it? Was this the season where they basically used Kimi to, I can't remember what they did. They ran him long, basically, so that people couldn't cover off Vettel. And from right from that moment, you're like, wow, they don't care about Kimi at all.
I think that's true. They've had a couple other races. I wrote down the night race at Singapore, where
Let me sound clever. They missed the undercut. Yes. They missed the undercut, didn't they?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Exactly. That third stop, he was running, I think, on place for a podium. And afterward, in hindsight, it was clear, why did you stop him then? And I think Ferrari realized it, because at that race and several others, their press conference had quite a bit of talk about, oh, well, don't criticize the strategy we had. We were making the right call. And if you say that too often, you know, perhaps you've done something wrong. Another one was Austria for Kimi. He was running, I believe, as high as second place. And again, an ill-timed call, he was undercut by both of the Red Bulls, and it just seemed completely pointless.
Matt, it's a heavy charge, and lots and lots of incidents. It's hard to deny, isn't it?
What? It is hard to deny, and it's clear that in almost every race, Kimi is run as Ferrari's insurance policy, regardless of how he qualifies. So the strategy is always designed around putting Vettel into contention for the highest possible spot, and Kimi simply used to cover off whatever eventuality they think they might not notice on the actual day of the race.
So it's sort of like, it's a version of the Red Bull strategy where they're quite happy to split strategies, except Ferrari will go out of their way to make sure that Vettel's getting a good. But then again, Vettel hasn't really performed enough to leap on it, Michael, have they? So had he been at the top of his game, the top of his form, he might have been able to take advantage, but he himself has not really been on fire.
That's absolutely right. The start of the year started out good. Everything seemed fine. I went back and looked at the beginning of the year, and think about this. Through Spain, which was round five, there was a Ferrari on the podium at each race. In fact, up through the first nine races, Ferrari had nine podiums. In the remaining 12 races, they only had two. So there was a huge drop-off throughout the year. And you saw this in Vettel. Not only in the way he drove, but I think part of his attitude. We saw quite a bit of the radio communications with his team where he just seemed so frustrated and didn't have that same carefree attitude that Vettel always had when he was romping to four world championships with the Red Bull team.
Matt, before we go to Neil, there's a great comment in the chat room.
Yeah, Blackout 19, who might be in for comment of the week at this point, I have to say. Reliance on the magic eight ball for pit calls didn't help. Should I box? Chances aren't good. Sorry, Kimmy.
Neil, what have you made of Ferrari this year?
Oh, man, where do you want to start? I mean, I remember at the start of the year, Australia, everyone was saying, well, Ferrari have actually closed the gap to Mercedes and will be the team to challenge them. But I disagreed straight away, and I based it on what I saw in the race. Now, if you remember the race properly, Kim, after the red flag, I remember the pit stops, and they sent Seb out, I think it was on the soft, the red marked tires, and Rosberg on the I think it was the medium or the option tire. Vettel didn't pull a gap bigger than 4 seconds. And I remember the delta between those tires were, I think, about half a second per lap. But he pulled no more than about 4 seconds. And I was like, well, have they actually improved that much that they've actually closed the gap to the Mercedes? And then you just start seeing it dropping off race by race. On a Friday, they look impressive as hell. Long run pace, everyone's like, Ferraris are in contention for the race. But then come race day, it's either, well, like, what's his name? Blackout 19 says, they turn to the magic eight ball and go, what should we do next? It's like they've got no clue. And then, you know, when you look at it, it's kind of like, it's probably one of the worst, drop-offs I've seen in a long time.
It's McLaren 2013-esque, isn't it?
Well, you could call it, yeah. I think 2013, I'd probably say 2013 was better than this year for Ferrari, because at least, you know what I mean? You know what you were getting, but this year they thought they genuinely had a chance. But then from the first, as Michael said, they were on the podium nine of the first nine races. Then afterwards, they were just basically disappear.
Yeah.
Didn't even qualify in the front row of one single race this year.
I don't think so. Yeah, you're right.
Not one front row they got this year, which is kind of strange.
Considering that Lewis was barely on the front row himself, you'd think they'd want to be front and centre. So let me have
Who's
another.
Lewis?
Huh?
Who's Lewis?
Lewis Hamilton. He's a F1 racing driver.
I don't know who that is.
You're not going to comment on today. You're not going to be drawn on Lewis today. Very stoic of you. Okay, let me try this again. Bahamut Lamat in the chat room says, lol, thanks for slaughtering my username spanners. My girlfriend is dying of laughter. And then the next comment by a Matt Trumpets says, names are a weak point. Yes, we know this. We understand names. I try my best. I swear. Stephen, some comments on Ferrari.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a point about the race in Abu Dhabi, because people were saying that it was a fantastic strategy from Ferrari to get them the podium, but I couldn't help just think this would not have happened had Lewis not been driving really slowly and backing Nico into Verstappen,
yeah, of course it wouldn't, yeah,
into everyone coming. So I'm not sure why they were so surprised and so happy that they got the podium.
Great. Well, I have a question for Michael, since you're talking about Ferrari. I'm wondering whether you think that it's a question of Renault having caught up Ferrari in the engine game, or whether we're seeing the effects either of Allison's ill-planned car from the beginning or from his loss early on in the season hampering Ferrari the most.
It's probably a little bit of both, although I think that the loss of James Allison this year had a big impact on Ferrari. The last couple of years have been very unstable for them, and to have your chief technical person leave is a big disruption in the team. It affects everything from not only the way the engineering team operates to prepare the cars, but just the general feeling within the team where nobody knows what's going to happen next or who's going to be fired next.
And in the chat room, James Funnel says, the best thing was in Germany when Ferrari tried to undercut the Red Bull. I remember this. The Red Bull was a long way in front, and Vettel replied, undercut whom? So yes, obviously we're going to go on to their organisational problems, but just tactically, they have seemed absolutely clueless. So do you think, is there something fundamentally wrong with the way they make their calls, or a personality that makes their calls?
That's a good question. I'd really like to know. Definitely the relationship between a driver and his engineer is very important. When Vettel was at Red Bull, he had Rocky, who he seemed to really get on with. I don't know how he feels about his engineers at the Ferrari team now, but what it seems is there's not that close personal relationship where he feels that they trust each other and they can operate at their best.
Yeah, well, could it not also be that the problem is just simply farther up the food chain? I mean, you know, the strategy calls don't come from the race engineers. The race engineers interpret the driver's comments into setup changes on the car and then help them with strategy decisions on the day. But to me, if I look at it, I would almost think that the problem is further up the food chain with Ferrari strategists. And just in general with their organization. I mean, you know, we've seen Marchionne in there with the weed whacker going after the hierarchy and trying to flatten things. I mean, is that really where the trouble's coming from?
Yeah, I think so. There's been a lot of rumors this year that those at Ferrari are all a little bit nervous. When you see in the last few years, Luca Di Montezemolo has gone. Stefano Domenicali has gone. It kind of puts this pervasive fear within the team. And it's got to be a little bit frustrating for everyone. So definitely what Ferrari needs is clear, stable leadership at the top. And it's interesting to look, when Vettel came to the team, in my mind, it's almost like a siren song, Ferrari is, and that they lure drivers in.
That's fantastic.
So what's happening is they're luring him in and saying, Vettel, come here and you'll be covered in glory and victories and you'll do what Alonso couldn't do. And last year it seemed great. Everything was on track. And this year he's been drugged down to a watery grave, it seems. It's just difficult, I think, for everyone all around. What Vettel wanted to do was basically emulate his hero, Michael Schumacher, and have that success at Ferrari. What Vettel did not do, which Schumacher did, was bring his successful team with him. And it's interesting to me that the most stable and successful period of that time was when you had a proven team that were transferred into to the Italian team.
Okay, I'm muted. If you remember, early in the year, I wrote an article about Ferrari, titled "What's Gone Wrong at," I think that "Gone Ferrari." That's the name of it.
That's a good title.
One of the conclusion. Huh?
It's a good title for the subject. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. My final conclusion was basically Ferrari's problem is basically Marchionne. Because he has walked in and he's basically said, well, you're going to have to win straight away. I don't want to hear no excuses because I'm giving you all the, because if I remember correctly, he's actually released more funds for budget. And he basically said, well, you need to give me wins right away. The start of the year, he said Ferrari was going to win the first race of the season. They screwed that one up. And I can't remember which was the next race he turned up again and said, well, I need another win. And they screwed up on that very race weekend as well. Now, my question to you, Michael, is, we spoke about it before we came on, is, as you said, Vettel went to Ferrari to basically mimic Schumacher. What if he doesn't succeed, right? And Alonso said it, unless he wins a title at Ferrari, he's basically failed. He hasn't done any better than me. So how would this reflect on Vettel if he's not successful at Ferrari?
Michael, interesting.
I think Vettel's his legacy is pretty well intact with 4 world championships. But Rubbish. There is something different about doing it at another team. And certainly it was his dream to go in there and win and succeed where Alonso couldn't and sort of establish himself as just that elite, top-tier legend. So I think it will definitely...
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Probably be considered a big disappointment and failure to some extent if he doesn't win. At the very least, where he needs to be now is winning races and challenging for the championship. If he could have a season like Alonso did, say, in 2012, I think that would give him a lot of confidence and would be a good step forward.
Okay, well, I didn't plan this, but what we've actually done is gone from Red Bull to Ferrari, and now we're going to move along to Force India. Neil, big bad Neil. It's been a good season for Force India. Finished fourth place, pound for pound, pretty good.
Actually, I gave them the team of the season. I mean, when you look at what they've got to work with, you know, they've not got the biggest budget or the biggest sort of facilities. But if you work it out in terms of points per dollar,
yeah,
they've got the better return on investment compared to anyone else. And all of that stems from what Ferrari doesn't have, a good man at the top, and that's Bob Fernley. You know, he's one of them people. A lot of people probably doesn't give him the respect or the push to the limelight that he actually deserves. But since he's been at Force India, that team basically has gotten better and better compared to its competitors. I looked at the stats since 2008. They've actually only ever failed to improve. They've never actually finished lower. I think they've actually twice, if I remember correctly, they finished sixth and then they finished seventh, but yeah. They've actually kept on going up year by year, sixth, seventh, and they finished fourth this year. And to beat Williams as well.
Oh, yeah. But Matt, they've had a reputation in recent years of being the team that can start well, but then fail to develop. But here, mid-season, we saw good aero development coming through, and that's probably been the difference that's got them up to fourth place.
Yeah, well, I think what you see very clearly with Force India is that they pay attention to their money and how they spend it better than any other team on the grid. And if you were to take my suggestion and give the Constructors' Championship to the team that scored the most points with the least amount of money...
Ooh, I don't agree with that, but I'll come back to it.
They would be hands-down favorites to win. They are so clever when they see where their budget bubble is going to be, when the money is going to be there. They spend it wisely, and they make the most of their advantage. They stretch it when they need to, and they save it for when the other teams are going to be most vulnerable. Fernley is a genius, and I can only imagine what's going to happen when and if Vijay Mallya is eventually dragged off to India for not paying his bills, and someone with actual ability to pump money into the team takes over.
See, my question is, though, does it scale? Does it scale? So there's, you know, you have football managers that are good at doing the best they can with limited resources, bringing youth players in as part of a team, having a good system. You go and give them a budget at Real Madrid and they can't necessarily put together a superstar budget. So, you know, will Big Bad Bob, if he gets given a Mercedes budget, would he be able to scale that up with the logistics to take on the very top teams?
I don't think it's just about managing the finances. It's about putting the right people in the right places and getting them to work as a cohesive unit. And I think, as Michael said, as we talked about Ferrari, that seems to be the problem with Ferrari that Force India isn't having. They've got people, clever people in areas that do the job properly for them. So it's not, I don't think it's about just so much finances, but it's just to get the whole a la Russ Braun.
Well, the chat room again is saying, someone pay this man. He speaks the truth. To be clear, there is no payment. Paul Wright in the chat room says, Force India don't pay as much attention to the traditional development cycles that other teams stick to. Any truth in that, anyone?
I think so. Because if you look, most teams, they bring major updates at races like Spain, Spa, and if I'm not mistaken, Monza. And I don't think Force India brought a really big upgrade package this year. They've actually phased out equally over the year.
Michael,
instead of like concentrating like, yeah.
Sorry, mate, Michael. I just wanted to find out if Force India impresses Michael, because you know he's spoken up on Ferrari not impressing him. Maybe no one impresses him. Force India.
Definitely impressed by Force India. I completely agree with the amount of money that they have in the team, and what they've achieved is extremely impressive. What I want to know, get some of your opinions, is if it's not strictly money, if it's not just the budget that they have, how do they make that next step? Yeah. They haven't won a race. How do they get up there to where they're challenging on the podium and winning races?
So I'll just put that question to Matt Chompitz as well. Along with that, do you see them as the Red Bull, you've got a visionary top down, or do you see them more as Mercedes, which is like a project management team where they logistic their way to performance?
I don't think they have a singular genius, or if they did, I'd have to say it's really Fernley, and I put him more in the Braun camp of how he does things. I think he inspires, I think he hires really good people. He inspires them to do the best, and he creates an atmosphere where they are comfortable taking the chances you need to take to succeed with the budget that they have. And last of all, he's brilliant with the budget spreadsheet. He just looks at where and how the money's coming. And I think he's willing to make the most when he has to stretch, and he's willing to spend the money when it's there to be spent and when it's going to be most advantageous for their team. He doesn't really care what other people think.
Also, you also have to look at the drivers that they've chosen as well. That has also been crucial to the team. They've not really... if I'm to be honest, I think probably the worst driver they've actually ever had was Luizzi. But if you look prior to that, they've actually had some very good time, and probably Paul De Resta, who talked his way of a drive, which kind of, that I don't know. But they've actually chosen well when it comes to driver lineup. Perez, no.
I'm a fan. I'm a big fan of Perez.
I'm a big fan of Perez. I think the move to McLaren, I think McLaren were too quick to drop him. And because when he turned up at McLaren, he showed, was it Bahrain, where he gave Jensen a really hard time.
He was
Jensen
shoving him around.
They're like, can you tell this guy to...
And you're stop like, racing me. Stop racing
exactly.
me.
Exactly. So, and you look at his performance this year at Baku. Now, I don't care what you want to say. I know Lewis was having whatever D-rate issues, but he's still driving a Mercedes, for heaven's sakes. And he couldn't get close to him. So he has actually shown up, Hulkenberg. Now, I'm probably going to get a lot of stick for this. I'm talking about Force India, but I'm not really a big fan of Hulkenberg.
No.
I'm not really a big fan of Hulkenberg. I think he has gotten a lot of hype, but he has not actually produced the goods. I mean, every one of his teammates has secured podiums except him.
Yeah, I just admit it. You're just still bitter that he took Lewis out in Brazil.
That was a hell of a
from
move. I don't think anyone's saying that Hülkenberg's a poor driver. He's had his moments. He's had some fantastic races. But when the opportunities have come time and time again, it's Perez that is there in the position. And it's not a massive fluke. It's not that they were the only races that Perez was good. It's that Perez is just consistently that little bit better. So he's there to... Michael, do you want to talk? Because you're nodding, and I love when people agree with me.
I was just thinking the very same thing. Is I think Hülkenberg is very, very good, talented driver, but he's starting to fall into that Nick Heidfeld role, where he's a solid driver, he can get points, but he's not going to be that guy to push that extra step. And I think he lost out. He was overshadowed by his teammate this year.
Trumpets.
I just want to say, I mean, I'm going to throw it out there that although it's not Formula One, he did kind of get a podium in Le Mans the only time he raced there.
Yeah, but there's like, 14 other people in that team. Who knows? Maybe he dragged them down. I don't know. I don't know how... whatever. I don't know how tin tops work. Come on. All right, yeah. Force India, great job all round. I fear whether they would have the procedures and the infrastructure to scale that up, but I don't think anyone can doubt that basically they've won the Privateer Championship, haven't they? And it's been a fantastic season. What are Williams up to? You know, let's see what Williams do when they've got their Lance Stroll billions. But let's move on. Speaking of rookies. Bit of American music to make Michael and Matt feel at home. So let's talk about rookies. So let's go between Stephen and Michael here. How do you feel the rookies or the relatively new drivers have performed, Stephen? Who stand out for you?
Personally, I'd say all the rookies have done a brilliant job, to be honest. There's not been a year that I can remember when we've had three rookies, Palmer, Wehrlein and Ocon.
Yeah, but you've got to talk about Palmer in you've got to split Palmer, haven't you? You've got to talk about first half of the season Palmer and second half of the season Palmer.
Well, Palmer's an interesting story because the first race in Australia, he was fighting with Verstappen and Sainz for a long time. He was side by side with Bottas and Alonso, and he looked the real deal in that first race. But then it just went missing for the rest of the first half of the season. He had that opportunity in Hungary to score his first points, and he spun. And already his teammate Magnussen had been scoring some points throughout the year, especially in Russia. He scored quite a few points, did really well there.
Yeah, we really thought that was game over when he spun in Hungary. You kind of thought, oh, come on, you know, it's one too many. And, you know, obviously in the end, he's gotten his contract. But do you feel that maybe he's gotten that by default in a way because they couldn't agree terms with Magnussen?
Yeah, he's sort of the last choice, but it isn't a bad choice at all. I think in the future he's going to come good. He's throughout his junior career, it's taken him a while to adapt, and I think we've seen that this year. If we say the first half was the bad side, the second half was really good, excluding running into the back of Sainz in Abu Dhabi.
Now, but you see, we're desperate for Palmer to be good because he's a homegrown talent, and obviously his relationship with Jonathan Palmer, so he's a protege driver. The Palmer family have a lot of influence over young drivers. You know, they do a lot for motorsport in the UK. So we're tainted. We're all collectively willing him on. But how do people like Michael and Matt feel? How does Palmer come across to the non-Anglophile people?
I was definitely impressed with the latter part of the year. I didn't have a whole lot of expectations, I guess. I thought certainly he'll go up against Kevin and, you know, who's a little more experienced driver who's been in a top team. And I thought he would struggle. And I was pretty impressed that when we got to toward the end of the year, that during the races, you look for the Renault, and oftentimes it was Palmer that was in front. And I found that a bit unexpected.
Yeah, you know, I gotta say, his very first race out in Australia, I was really impressed with, like, his wheel to wheel. He had a big fight with somebody, I can't remember who it was, and I was like, oh, look at that, he might actually be something. And then I was just thoroughly underwhelmed with him. And then, you know, he kind of came in for a bit of redemption at the end of the year, so at best, you know, I would be like, well, you know, certainly, you know, he's the equal of Ericsson, who is managing the same Formula One. So you can't argue that he doesn't belong to be there at all.
My goldfish is the measure of Ericsson.
But the chat room seemed to be chiming in on this issue as well, in that Bahamut Tiamat thinks that Palmer is clearly the GOAT. And I think that might be sarcastic. And On the Gas is pretty much rubbishing him altogether.
And James Funnel's just chipped in with, I think he's just a slow learner, unlike other rookies. Well, luckily then, if that is the case, if it takes him a little while to adapt to a series, was it four seasons for GP2, then he's lucky, man. He's lucked in to getting this chance to show a second season. And I think though, two seasons is probably enough to get a sighter on him, don't you think, Matt?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, usually in Formula One it's a one and done. But he apparently did just enough to edge out Magnussen, or possibly his sponsorship was more attractive. One never really knows.
No.
And he's going to get a chance next year to show us what he's really got.
So I believe, and I might be wrong here, and we can speculate, can't we? Don't sue me, anyone, that Palmer brings £8 million for his seat, which I believe is the same as what Magnussen brings with his Danish fashion firm money. So I think there's nothing in it in that regard. They probably went with Magnussen first on reputation, couldn't agree a contract. But if you want Magnussen, I honestly don't think Palmer has been savagely beaten by Magnussen. Neil?
Oh, I just wanted to say, you know, I actually met Palmer once.
Ooh, was he nice?
Yeah, he was all right. But still don't mean I'm not going to bash him anyway. But personally, I don't think he did enough to keep his seat in Formula One this year, for next season, honestly. I mean, he has made some rookie.
He's a rookie.
He's a rookie, but come on. that's beyond rookie mistakes. I don't know. I think what it is, I think he was Renault just kept him because they thought, well, we can't get anyone else, because it was clearly apparent that they probably wasn't going to, Ocon was not going to go to Renault. So they just went, okay, then his daddy's got his dad. Oh, by the way, that's his dad, Spanners, not a relative.
All right.
You called his. Yeah,
is,
that's
is
his
a dad,
dad
not a relative? I think I feel, you know, related, what I mean, to my dad.
But I think they just chumped up the money. You know, the extra. And I personally, I think they probably threw in a proper couple million more than the standard $8 million, because why? There's better options out there than him. So why keep him?
Do you know what? I wouldn't be surprised, Mr. Trumpets, if the price did increase, seeing as his original contract was with Lotus and now Renault is, according to everybody else, a better prospect.
Well, of course it is, because it's going to be a works team. But here's the thing to consider, too. When you're talking about choosing between Magnussen and Palmer, does everybody remember when Toro Rosso got rid of Alguersuari and Buemi at the same time?
Yeah.
And one of the issues for a team is if you're changing the cars and you're changing both drivers, you no longer have a benchmark. You don't have someone who drove last year's car and can tell you how it pairs.
So in the absence of Magnussen, you really, Palmer's stock increased massively. So then again, well, we'll never know the details of the finances, but it's certainly an interesting point. Okay, Stephen, I know you've got another rookie slash new driver, and so has Michael. So let's quickly go through them, and then we'll go to our podium section.
Yeah, so I was going to look at Wöhrlein and Ocon.
Ooh, yes.
And I think they're very similar, to be honest. Obviously, Ocon came in halfway through the season, and I think he's done a brilliant job. Because if you look at Kvyat, he's gone from Red Bull to Toro Rosso mid-season, mm-hmm. and it took him a very long time to adapt. Whereas Ocon came in, I think he qualified behind Wöhrlein in Belgium, and again in Italy. But since then, he's really come on strong, especially that race in Brazil. I think he was running in the points till the last lap. So it's a little bit, I'd say, disappointing that he didn't get those points, because it meant that Manor finished behind Sauber.
So I have to admit, I've sort of lost track of that battle. But out of those two youngsters, who do you think's had the better half of the season? Notwithstanding that Ocon came into it raw, just you know, straight fact, who did better?
I think you have to say it's going to be Ocon, because he's the driver that's moving on straight away. He's the one that's gone to Force India for next year.
Unless
they've overlooked.
Yeah, unless they knew that there was going to be a seat coming up. Oh, conspiracy.
Oh, any conspiracy.
But on the face of it, you felt that, yeah, they were looking to promote a driver to Force India, and Ocon deserved it. Because that's harsh on Wöhrlein, who has impressed people.
I agree. He scored those points in Austria. But then there were quite a few mistakes. If you look at that crash in China, qualifying, was he the only one to crash on the damp patch?
Oh, yeah, he was. And because DRS was open, wasn't it? And he was the first one. To be fair, he made that mistake. And then everybody else after that closed their DRS until they got past it. So, you know, it's a bit harsh on him to sort of expect him to have the savvy to tip up to that, a river on the start-finish straight, and be able to deal with it. Neil, quick one from you before we go to Michael.
Well, and let's not forget, was it Austin where he beached the car and the engineer kept telling him, switch the car off. Mm. And he kept like, I'm going to try and get it out. And
I know
it
better.
Was about four different messages until Dave Ryan came on the blue on like, switch the car off now. And I think it was after that, the Ocon deal was announced, because, and even on the broadcasts I was watching on Sky, they alluded to that actually he's not very liked in the paddock.
Oh,
by
really?
Many of the team, oh, by many of the team bosses. They report that he's actually, many of the team bosses don't really, aren't that impressed with him, and apparently he has a very nasty attitude, something that was also mentioned during his touring DTM days. So that could have been one of the reasons why he didn't get promoted to the Force India seat, which is kind of strange, because Ocon just came in and did probably, was it two or three races, and he's off the Force India, and Wöhrlein's been there for most of the season, and he wasn't even that impressive against Arianto as well, so...
No, okay. And chat room, no, tinfoil hat has not been activated. They are here patiently by the side of us for when we really need them coming up soon. Some people are saying it's possibly Maldonado wearing a mask. Who are they talking about there? Not Palmer, surely. No, I think that's harsh. I think that's harsh. I'm willing to give Palmer another season to see if he can really do it for Britain. We've got a fine tradition of British racing car drivers, and I don't see why Palmer can't at least get up to Jensen-ish standards. I really don't. I don't see why he can't occupy that place in the British F1 mentality. Michael, who's your newbie? Who's your newbie that's impressed you this year?
Well, initially, I had some very good thoughts about Pascal Wöhrlein, because in qualifying, he had moved up, a couple times into Q2?
Yeah, that's impressive.
Very impressive with the Manor car. And even though I disagree a little bit with what Ford has said, I think he was handling Haryanto fairly well. But when Ocon came in, I thought he did step it up a little bit, because I do think Ocon came in with, I don't want to say a little bit more hype, but he does kind of have that I beat Verstappen at F3 factor behind him. So Ocon was definitely coming in with this sign above his head that everyone's watching. And I think it's difficult to come in halfway through the year and get up to speed. And the way he did that, and I know I'm kind of switching out from Berlanta to Ocon.
We'll allow it.
I thought it was very, very impressive in that Verlaine had been doing very well, and I certainly expected Ocon to struggle a little bit more at the start, but by the end of the year, I think Ocon is the better prospect.
Chat room, you make me laugh, but I'm not going to read that out. Michael, that wasn't your pick for the new driver, though, was it?
Oh, I don't think I had a pick for the new driver.
Oh, well, you were going to talk about Carlos Sainz in a separate topic. He's newish, though, isn't he? And he's a lot of people rate him as highly as Max Verstappen, but he's really not got the props. And you have to say that frustration hasn't really leaked through. There's been no diva-ish behaviour from him. He's just quietly got on with it. And if you kind of read between the lines, you look at his performances and go, boy's doing darn well.
Absolutely. If you look at how drivers react to difficult situations. Okay, obviously, when Kvyat, when he was switched from Red Bull down to the Toro Rosso team, for a while there, he completely fell apart. A little bit understandable, but what's forgotten is that Carlos Sainz, he maybe not equally, but he was certainly completely crushed that he was not the one chosen over Verstappen to move up to the Red Bull team.
Well, I'll bet.
But like you said, he didn't complain. I didn't see a lot of immature actions from him. What he did do is from that race on from Spain, he had 3 straight points finishes. In fact, the next 7 races, he was in the points 6 times. So he answered on the track, which is what you want a driver to actually do.
That's very impressive. And underrated. Matt, it has sneaked under the radar, isn't it? We were looking at a future F1 star. I think we raved about him a lot around Canada time, didn't we? That just as, he convinced everyone who's doing well, then smashed into the wall of champions. But we are sort of convinced as a unit that he has a future in F1.
Yeah, Sainz definitely has what it takes. He's had a very good season this year. He's not let adversity wreck him mentally. And he has, especially, and always for me, if you ask me, is a driver good, the first thing I'm going to say is, well, how do they do when it rains? And he's another one of these drivers who just has kind of a magic touch when it rains. He does exceedingly well when it rains. And so to me, that puts him in with a shot. You put him on a really good team, put him in a top team, I think he would deliver for you quite nicely.
Okay, now it's time for some meaningless, uninformed speculation. Okay, Matt, you set out some rules for our speculation for the driver transfer market in one particular area. We know that world champion Nico Rosberg will not be around in 2017 to defend his title, which leaves an empty space at Mercedes. So we're talking about the connotations, aren't we, of what will happen with that spare seat?
Yes, well, as I mentioned earlier, the really interesting thing is who gets to drive next to Lewis. Now, Rosberg's been put himself out to pasture, as it were.
Okay, so let's look to the panel and let's have our left of arc, right of arc. Let's talk about an outlandish scenario that could happen, and then another scenario. If you had to put your mortgage on it, where do you think you would go? Do you want to kick us off, Matt?
Yeah, sure. And I will go with possibly the most outlandish and ludicrous answer possible. In that,
tin hat ready?
Yeah, you have tinfoil on. Yeah, buckle your seatbelts. Put on your magic glasses.
Drink beer. That's also good advice.
Well, drinking beer is just plain healthy for you.
Unless you're on your commute.
Well, yeah, arguable. There may be evidence against this. True. I'm going to say that it's going to be Ricciardo.
Wow, really? I can't see Red Bull taking that lying down.
Because Hamilton, having been treated less than fairly in his own eyes, will be taking a walk to Red Bull because he thinks they're going to be better next year. And so you're going to have a swap with Ricciardo to Mercedes. Hamilton and Verstappen at Red Bull, which I think would be genius. And then Alonso is going to make yet another bad move and go to Mercedes with Ricciardo, and Ricciardo will beat him, but they'll both lose to Hamilton in the Red Bull. That's my ludicrous scene.
The only worst move would be, wouldn't it, if Alonso would go to Renault or something like that. On the Gas is saying, Matt, you're wrong again. How a driver does in the rain isn't as significant as drive performances to win the championship. Defend yourself.
Botas.
Okay. Well, we will let that argument stand for itself, and I will pretend I understand it. Blackout 19 says it's time for the rumor about Alonso having a Mercedes get-out clause with McLaren to resurface. Now, that's not the rumor I heard. The rumor I heard was that he had a pre-contract with Mercedes around the time that he was falling out with Ferrari, and that didn't work out. I haven't heard about it going the other way, but that certainly is a dishy prospect, isn't it, to have Alonso back in that seat against Lewis Hamilton. That would be absolutely amazing. Michael Cords in Las Vegas, give us your left and right of arc of what's going to happen to that spare Mercedes seat.
You're definitely on it. I would love to see Hamilton Alonso part two. I still think Alonso is at the top of his game.
Really?
Challenge Hamilton. I do. Look at some of the drives he's had this year. He's fantastic. Whether he can pull off beating Hamilton over a full year, I don't know. But it would be fireworks, and it would be fun. And all of us F1 fans, we'd be all the better for it.
Okay, then. But if you had to put your mortgage, your house, yes, on who's going to fill that seat, who would it be?
I think they're going to play it safe. All the top drivers are tied up. I don't think they're going to make a big move and try to go for someone. So I think they're going to put in Pascal Wehrlein.
Pascal Wehrlein. Matt, we never got your sensible decision, did we?
Absolutely not. You did not. And so my most sensible of sensible decisions is they'll buy out Carlos Sainz's contract.
Oh, I can't see it. I can't see Red Bull playing ball with Mercedes. Not after engine gate.
But if you want my real choice, what I would really like to see is Antonio Felix da Costa, who just won Macau for the second time in that other seat. He's a brilliant driver. He'd be incredibly cheap, and he'd do a good job. He's demonstrated under the most intense pressure he can deliver.
Well, obviously, we follow Formula E, and we could probably name a handful of Formula E drivers we'd like to see come back in. But at the end of the day, Mercedes don't need cheap. They don't. That's just not one of their considerations.
Yeah, but it's not just about cheap. Winning Macau twice, that's a thing.
Stephen, what's your thing?
It's a really difficult one to choose just one driver, isn't it? Mercedes have come out and said, we want a number one and a number two, which makes you think Wehrlein straight away.
Have they said that? They've said that they want a hierarchical driver lineup.
That's what I think I read today on Autosport.
Well, must be true then. Whatever, they're getting bought out anyway.
Yeah.
what will become of their podcast with their production values that think they can compete with us being wrong but first? Ha! Now let's see how you transition, boys. Matt?
Yeah, I don't know if you want to get around to everybody first, but I have an actual piece of evidence that I can bring to this discussion.
Okay, and then back to Stephen.
I read in Motorsport Today, they interviewed Toto Wolff, and he outlined possible drivers they'd have, and he mentioned Bottas. And he said that that was the least likely choice, which makes me think right away that it's Bottas who's really in the running for this.
Stephen, back to you.
Yeah, I also heard a story that McLaren, obviously they're quite tight on money at the moment, so that could mean that Alonso...
Yeah.
Is going to be bought out of his contract because it will benefit McLaren for the finance, benefit Mercedes for the driver lineup, for the Constructors' Championship as well. You want two drivers in that team that are going to take on Red Bull next year, and I think Alonso is probably the best shout.
The chat room is going to get down to Ladbrokes and put a fiver on Matt's theory, but Stephen, if you had to put your house, your parents' house, on who is going to... let's raise the stakes and make your parents homeless here. Who would you put their house on to take that second seat?
Ooh. Well, there's a nice 100-to-1 shot on Antonio Giovinazzi from GP2.
I don't think they need to take a rookie. I don't think they need it. There's no reason for them to take that risk.
There isn't, but if you're thinking long term as well, do a Red Bull, sign like Max up to the team, and they can do that with Giovinazzi. Missed out on the GP2 championship, only just in the last race. So it could be a good shout long term as well.
I'm so sad to see your parents out on the street having spent so many years raising you. Never mind, never mind. Neil, come on then. Let's hear your theories on who's going to fill that second seat.
All right. Just for entertainment value of seeing Toto and Nikki running around screaming, pulling their hairs out with all of the infighting tension in the team, I got Alonso.
Just
for the entertainment value of just seeing those two go nuts.
Because
just for that.
They both those drivers, I think, would with their swapping team mechanics, it doesn't matter who they swap, they would still just, that's it, you're on my team. No, you're on my team. Forget Mercedes, you're both. It would be chaos, I think.
And just, but can you imagine the entertainment value of seeing Toto being grilled by Eddie Jordan after race about it? You wouldn't stop laughing. It would be TV gold.
I think Alonso comes across very cool, calm, and collected in interviews. I bet you he is ruthless when it comes to politics.
Very. I mean, imagine he's having a bad race and he goes GP2 engine to the Mercedes. What would happen?
I know.
So
yeah.
I mean, just for entertainment value, I say Alonso.
Okay, but if you had to put your family's house on it now, Neil, who do you think is going to end up in that second seat?
Well, all right. Stephen mentioned the Matt and Stephen mentioned the two people who I thought could be possible choices. But what about Pierre Gasly? Because he doesn't have a drive next year, and it doesn't look like he'll be going. So all the seats at Red Bull are basically filled. I don't see Mercedes going for anyone at Red Bull. They Toto came out today in regards to the article Stephen mentioned that he said there's three choices. They could go for someone young. They could buy out a contract, but they're not looking to do that because everyone, that's just too much hassle. And they said there's a third option. So, and then to throw more fuel on the fire, Bottas tweeted a picture earlier with a track which basically has the same color scheme as Mercedes. So now he's starting getting everyone start thinking, oh, so he's Bottas off to Mercedes, but yeah. I don't see why it wouldn't be a good shot to try and go for Pierre Gasly. I mean, GP2 champion, guy's a good, damn good driver. Why not?
Okay, so Matt, go on, and then it's my turn.
Who manages Bottas again? Help me out.
Oh, it's Toto Wolff manages Bottas.
Oh, is it?
No,
really?
Way.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Surprise.
Yeah, but you have to also remember, Flavio managed Alonso when he was at Renault, so. If anyone's going to say a conflict of interest, does it really matter?
Okay, my turn. Everyone shut up. My turn. So my outlandish one, the one I want to see. Yes, Alonso versus Hamilton part two would be fantastic. But what have we got? We've got on the grid a three-time world champion and a four-time world champion. That's the one we want to see. Vettel versus Hamilton head-to-head would be amazing. But it is outlandish because I think Vettel is smart enough not to do it. Vettel is smart enough to probably realize that in a straight fight, he is going to have to politic his way to a victory. And I don't think he's up for it. I don't get the sense he's up for that head-to-head battle with Lewis Hamilton. Lewis is out there saying, anyone, I don't care. Absolutely anyone. You agreeing, Neil?
Vettel's not going to go to Mercedes with Christian Horner said, no, there's no way he's going to sign, get Red Lewis in that team because it's going to disrupt Vettel.
Yeah, and so I've heard he's got a no Hamilton clause in his contract, whether that's rumour or not.
Well, that's probably rumour, but I don't see Vettel. Vettel wants a teammate that he can have a laugh with, you know, go and eat ice cream with Kimi and whatever like that. But if he's got a teammate that's as very competitive, look at 2014 against Ricciardo. He basically came in and basically said, well, you're the four-time world champion. That I don't really care. I'm here.
And if I had to put my mortgage on one, I think this is the absolute correct one, by the way. I know Matt is staking it all on Bottas. That's a good shout. I'm going to say Mercedes family, Mercedes test driver, Mercedes in DTM, Paul de Rester to take the second seat, be an out-and-out number two to Lewis Hamilton for next season, in a season where Mercedes expect to have more competition from Red Bull. So that's going to be next season. You're going to have two drivers dueling at Red Bull on equal status, which is going to be fireworks, but you're going to have Mercedes with the traditional 1-2 driver pairing. Matt Trumpets, where can people find you on that there internet?
You can find me at MattPT55 on the Twitters. And should you happen to be in New York City this coming Friday, do come see me at The Bitter End with Midlife Tom.
It's worth saying what you do. I mean, I call you Matt Trumpets in case that's not enough of a clue for people. You play the trumpet.
Yes, I do. I'll be playing with a band at The Bitter End. It'll be a pretty good time.
And the rest of them, they are a collective hive mind. You can find them at spannersready.com, obviously. But please follow them on Twitter. They are interesting fellas. Michael, what's your handle?
On Twitter, I am at Michael Cords.
No underscores. That's a great shout.
No underscores.
Stephen.
@SWilliamsF1 on Twitter.
Say it again.
@SWilliamsF1.
No underscores as well. Where can we find you, Mr. Fortis, Mr. Neil?
Well, you can find me at I'm4C44, or, you know, I'm the chief. I'm king of the lunatics.
King of the lunatics. And of course, you can find me at spannersready.com along with the rest of these reprobates. You can follow me on Twitter, please, @spannersready. Why not check out Spanners Log? And I urge you to go over to our sister Formula E podcast, E-Radio Show. They've just had a great interview with Scarbs Tech, @ScarbsTech, who's joined them for a second time to talk about Formula E technology. Next week, it's probably going to get emotional. We're going to talk about the Rosberg transfer. Was he right or wrong to quit F1? And also, we're going to get the Badger GP boys on board at some point as well. Until next time, remember that wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. This was Missed Apex, Fighters Room. There you go, Trumpets, you owe me a fiver. They weren't all rubbish.
So, right after, and chicks dig scars?
Yeah.
Can we add, and Spanners forgets comment of the week?
We've got a stall for me to find comment of the week. Where is it?
It's right here. It's Blackout 19.
No, I've got to play the jingle. All right then, Matt, let's do it. Let's find out what was.
Comment of the week.
And comment of the week is Blackout 19. Reliance on the magic 8-ball for pit calls didn't help. Referring to Ferrari. Should I box? Chances aren't good. Sorry, Kimmy.
Comment of the week.
I'm just waiting for the day that people put on their Twitter handles, you know, followed by so-and-so, followed by so-and-so, you know, one-time comment of the week, winner, Missed Apex podcast, two-time winner, Missed Apex. That's when we'll know we've made it.
Indeed.
Oh,
any time now. It's going to happen any time now.
People are saying they want a pony award as well. Okay, quickly think about it, guys. Has anyone got a pony award for the entire season?
Daddy, I want a pony. And I want it now.
Hands up. Who's got one?
Vettel in Russia.
Vettel in Russia. Actually, no, yeah, sorry. That has got to be Vettel in Russia because he obviously pressed the radio for his first pony and then he had his second pony straight away.
I've got a better one. Kristen Horner's postcard where it says, "How's my driving? Call Yoss."
Absolutely quality.
Daddy, I want a pony. And I want it now.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.